Okay. Go ahead and start. Natasha asked Stan and I to talk a bit about Super Eddington stellar winds, try to explain what that means. I should say I have to leave kind of halfway through this because I have to go Skype with prospective grad students who are visiting Berkeley today. And this is when the schedule got set up. So we're going to kind of split this up. I'll start by talking a little bit, and then Stan will talk some. I think that's how we decided to split things up. So I'm going to start by a little bit of a pedagogical overview of certain aspects of stellar wind theory in general, mostly to build up to kind of what I mean. And so the work that I've done on this, I should say, is a very particular model of how you might get Super Eddington winds. I'll explain what that means, but I'll start relatively pedagogically. And in particular, I'll start by talking about winds in cases where we don't worry about radiation pressure at all, just gas pressure-driven winds, kind of remind you a little bit about the theory of that, and use that to move into radiation pressure-driven winds. And this will be partially because it's intended to be pedagogical. It's going to be relatively theoretical. But if you have questions or comments about the observational context, let me know. So I should say, maybe to start with that, so the interest and motivation in the Super Eddington winds is for understanding systems like Eta Carina, luminous blue variable, the enhanced mass loss that we see prior to some interesting number of core collapse supernovae. So type 2N supernovae, where you see narrow lines, evidence of interaction between the supernova shock and a strong stellar wind. So there's evidence for lots of mass loss in a relatively short time. I think there's a very interesting question that's not well understood, which is how much of that is actually what you would call a steady wind versus how much of that is essentially an explosion, a shock, unbinding material. And those are very different, and I don't think we actually, I mean, I think there's some evidence, other people here are much more expert on this than I, so they should chime in. You know, I would say there's some evidence in systems like LBVs or Eta Carina where you had mass loss for a relatively extended period of time, so it really looks like a wind rather than just an impulsive explosion. But that's an interesting theoretical thing that I won't really touch on just by addressing the wind aspect. Okay? Comments, questions? This is meant to be a discussion, not a talk. And I should say, I'll just say that actually a lot of this theory, some of the theory that I'll talk about towards the end, is actually also potentially relevant for Super Eddington winds driven from accretion disks. You have an energy source there, viscous heating in the disk, which can drive strong winds.
What about for the spinner crater disk expansion fixed reverse?
Yeah, so that's also, I mean, that is one of the cases that's also interesting, yes, and also classical novae, where there's evidence for Super Eddington luminosities and very strong winds, and we still don't understand very well how those are produced. So yes, thank you. Those are other cases. That's right. Okay. Good. So there was this gorgeous picture on Tuesday of a Kip and Han diagram with all the different stages in color. So here's my analogous stellar wind picture. Stars are roughly spheres. Maybe they rotate, so they're a little distorted, as mine is. And they have winds.
Okay. They're not spherically symmetric.
They're not so spherically symmetric. Oh, that's okay. So for steady state winds, just to remind you, so we're interested in solving, say, the momentum equation. And I should say, I'm going to start just kind of quickly go through some stuff that's relevant for thinking about cases like the sun and build up from there. So a simple model of a steady state wind has a constant mass flux, satisfy the momentum equation, and then the energy equation, which I've written in entropy form here. So the change in entropy is given by some heating. So what do we think actually powers the solar wind, we think it's waves that are excited by the convection, which travel out through the chromosphere, and the corona, a few solar radii, dissipate their energy, heating the material up to high temperatures. So now you're at low enough densities that when you heat it, it doesn't cool quickly. So you heat it up to high enough temperatures that you can actually overcome gravity and drive a wind. So the heating is really the key thing that gets the solar wind going. And the kind of modern models are that this is heating driven by alphane waves that are excited by convection. In the sun, the solar wind ends up taking away about 10 to the minus 6 of the solar luminosity's worth of energy. That's the kinetic energy flux in solar wind, so it's not actually energetically all that important. So there's another way that we can think about the energetics of the problem. So this is thinking about it from the point of view of the increase in entropy due to heating, but we can also write the energy equation in a way that's more what people call the conservative form of the energy equation. So this is an internal energy equation for the entropy. This is now a total energy equation that describes the total energy of the system. And this say again?
Oh gosh.
Okay. Get my rows right here. Parentheses, parentheses. So, for a large piece of chalk.
I'll get the chalk.
Okay, this is okay here. So this is just another way of thinking about the energetics, as I said. Instead of internal energy, it's a total energy equation. This quantity here is the Bernoulli parameter of the flow. So this is the kinetic energy per unit mass, 1/2 v squared, h for an ideal gas is just 5/2 p over rho. I'm going to write this as 5/2 times the speed of sound squared, where that's the speed of sound squared just defined by p over rho. So we can also now, if we write this out in a spherical system, this divergence has a r squared inside of it. So you notice there's an r squared rho v, which is related to m dot. So if I write out the divergence multiplied by 4 pi, what you actually have is the following. That the derivative of the energy flux carried by the wind, and the energy flux carried by the wind is the mass flux m dot times this energy per unit mass, the Bernoulli parameter, and again, in the case of something like the solar wind, we have this continued wave deposition of energy, which produces a source of heating. And so we can integrate this. So this becomes roughly the following relationship for so it's just a relationship between the kinetic energy, so the idea, right, at infinity, the energy is assumed to be all kinetic, any thermal energy has been lost to adiabatic expansion, gravity is irrelevant. At the base of the wind, the energy is all gravitational. And so the energy you end up with at infinity, the kinetic energy at infinity, is the energy per unit mass that you're able to put in, E dot over M dot, minus the energy you have to fight against, which is the gravitational energy. Okay. How did?
I mean, second line for the top has an H.
That's right.
There's no H down.
So H is important, and it's actually what drives the wind. But the idea is that at the base, okay. So this is a. Often you'll see kind of the solar wind formulated as you're really hot at the base and that drives the wind. Here, that's not actually what the photosphere of the sun is. You're very cold at the base. So here the idea is at the base you're cold, so the energy is actually the gravitational. Okay. At infinity you're cold, the energy is all kinetic. And what happens in between is the heating heats you up, gives you for a while a big pressure, which pushes you out and drives the wind. But for the actual energy balance, that's just the intermediary that kind of converts this stuff into work.
So why you neglect it at the beginning?
Neglect what?
At the beginning.
Because the photosphere is cold. Right.
So I think you just want to write down the E dot, too. I think that would help.
So,
your E dot is just an integral, right? But I think the boundary.
Oh, sorry. This is integral from 0 to infinity. Thank you.
So, well, it's R foot or something.
Yeah. So, I think the question, so if you look at what the temperature profile, you know, in the solar wind actually is, it looks something like this.
Right.
So, often you'll see people talk about the solar wind as, let me pick this as my starting point and integrate out. And then I have some high pressure that's at the base. But really, in this way of doing it, what I'm saying is deep down I'm cold. I have to get hot somehow. And that's what the heating is doing.
Yeah, but deep down there you're hot. Your internal energy is roughly, specific internal energy is roughly half of your potential energy.
Ah, so you want to go way deep down. Yes, I agree with you. So I could, I don't want to do this, but I could. So the actual temperature profile of the sun, right? Not in some weird units. So you're right, deep in here at the photosphere, the thermal energy is very small compared to the gravitational potential energy. Deep in, you're right, the thermal energy is of order the gravitational potential energy. But we're starting kind of at the photosphere. Okay.
Just a brief comment. So that heating is a net heating, and so you have lots of ways when you add heat, you can lose it by radiation or conduction. And so that Q...
Sure, absolutely, yeah, no, good. So this is simplified. There would also be conduction, and there would also be radiative cooling, which, say, in the chromosphere is critical, okay, less critical as you go further and further.
And particularly if you go through the transition region, those terms...
Yes, absolutely, yeah, no. Okay. So then the last thing, just to remind you how we actually calculate these things, is if you combine these equations, you can write down a single equation that describes the velocity. And I won't go through the algebra. So this is the kind of famous sonic point equation for the Parker-type solar wind models, whereby getting rid of the pressure gradient in terms of the density gradient and the temperature gradient, and then getting rid of those using the energy equation and mass conservation, we can get this single equation that describes the evolution of the velocity. It's not really a single equation because you don't know, you have to solve for the sound speed. But this is an equation that describes the acceleration of the flow.
So that's dvdt.
It's dvdr.
dvdr.
This is a steady state, so
okay, okay,
yes.
Okay, great.
So it's dvdr. Yes. Okay. That may now look like a d. It is. Okay. And so the idea, right, in the Parker-type wind models is that there's a unique solution which smoothly accelerates out through a sonic point, the place where V is equal to the adiabatic speed of sound. That's the gamma is just for the adiabatic speed of sound. The right-hand side has to be zero. Just for a second, for simplicity, let's neglect the heating part on the right-hand side. at the place where V squared is gamma CS squared, we have that that radius is equal to 2gm over so this is the sonic point. So again, just for simplicity, I'm neglecting that term. So at the place where the speed is equal to the speed of sound, that happens at a particular place. This is actually an implicit equation because the sound speed, the temperature, depends on radius, as we drew. Again, in simple models, you often see if it's isothermal and you just specify a sound speed, then this uniquely determines where the sonic point is. But in general, it's some implicit equation that determines where it is. And under the assumption that at infinity there's no pressure, so the wind can freely expand to infinity, then the unique solution, the solution that's picked out if you do time-dependent problems, for instance, is the one that goes through the sonic point. Right? There's a family of solutions. I'm not going to go through all of that fun stuff. But this is the kind of unique solution. Okay. And I'll give you two specific mechanisms to think about.
Object divided by maximal speed. So it is gravitational radius of the